I really appreciate the question. I think it's an interesting one, and it takes it to a bigger level. Turning it on to help. I think all areas should be careful of what you wish for. And the only example I have is China, because I have no knowledge of Russian contemporary art or the Russian political scene at all, to be quite honest. I was brought here to talk about something else. But in China, they were quite excited to enter the international arena for the contemporary art world. And I think your question is, what is the benefit of a local region becoming global? I see more deficits than I see benefits. And it's very clear, I don't need to list them, because if you just look at the sort of rise of the Chinese contemporary art scene in less than a decade, the escalating, skyrocketing prices for works of art of emerging artists who've never heard of who are under 30, you wonder what will happen with that local community. Because the global community basically doesn't give a rat's ass about the local community. The global community cares about itself. And they're trying to find what's next, what's fresh, what's the next territory market. The minute that local scene is no longer entertaining to the global scene, they're the first ones to drop them, just as quick as the gallery will dump an artist if they have one bad show. Not two, but one. So I think the question is really apt in looking at where the Russian contemporary art scene is going, what path they want to take, what history has taught us, good and bad, so that you who are here can be in the driver's seat of your local scene and figure out when, how, if, what is global. I don't know. Anyway, Jonathan has some thoughts.
Well, I guess if I can paraphrase Barnett Newman, ornithology is of no interest to a bird. And I really feel that, we really have to separate out some of the conversations we're having here. There's one conversation about people's careers. There's another conversation about the global art market. There's another conversation about curators who have to do exhibitions, and they go to what is essentially a trade fair in Venice and other places, and then you suddenly see recapitulations of that, museums at least in the United States, all over the place. But, I really think that the issue, I'm interested in the issue for artists, and I think that artists are having a conversation, and either you want to be part of that conversation or you don't. And I'm not sure that, these questions of nationality or whether you're in a center or not a center are really the right questions. The questions are, what are the issues about, that are pressing on your life at this moment? What are the issues that are being raised in global dialogue with other people whose work you admire, whatever nationality they are, that you want to have a conversation with? And I think it is about the conversation. It reminds me, one time when I was a young student, I asked Harold Rosenberg to sign one of his books for me, and what he wrote in the book was, "Get good ideas." And I really thought about that, because it's just, that's what it's about. And I think that to have this here is a fantastic thing, but it's an opportunity to have a conversation. I don't feel... Go ahead, Rob.
I just want to interject on that. I think that's, in fact, essential to what Calvin Cox Art has been about from the very beginning. He is presenting, time after time, enigmatic personalities, characters, about which a little is known, tells you a little bit. And then he amends the text that gives you the description in part and leaves big gaps with the opinions of others who look at this character and try to make sense of him according to one or another perspective. And this is the thing he shows at Monastirsky, since the Collective Actions Group did this kind of thing, whether it be a performance, it would be viewed from different perspectives by different people in the field, and then the work consisted of the resolution of their different experiences in reactions. And Monastirsky has a book like this published, in which all of these different phases of the assimilation, understanding, and, if you will, positive misunderstanding of the work is the key. The other day when I was at the press conference in Kushner, I tried to argue that this is very much a key also to Bakhtin. And the whole idea that Bakhtin sets forth in discussing Dostoevsky, that basically the meaning of literature is the understanding of how dialogue operates within the characters, between the writer and the characters, between the reader and the writer and the characters, and so on it goes. Now, whether or not it is possible to do that presently with this kind of installation in Moscow remains to be seen. But I actually share with Jonas that I think too much conversation has been about the market. We did it ourselves, so we have only ourselves to blame in some ways, but it was conversation in the air. Too much conversation is about nationalism. That is not something that we did, but it's something that we've been responding to. What we really should be talking about is the work. And this is a work where three incompletely known personalities are given exhibitions, that each one of them represents a position vis-a-vis a hypothetical artist named Kamakov, of which one of those characters is also named Kamakov, and that this artist and this personality, this persona, is trying to figure out what his relationship is to epics of Russian culture, and also to forms of Russian culture. What happens, for example, in the early days when Rosenthal discovers the void of his friend of his painting and can't stand it, and begins to fill it up around the edges and begins to break up the images where in a true supremacist painting would have had relatively pure primary colors, he sticks in all kinds of off-key colors. So there becomes this very complicated dialogue between Rosenthal, Malevich, the misunderstanding of Malevich, and so on. By the time you get to the end of it, there's a conversation between Rosenthal and, of all people, Donald Judd. And this happens in part because Donald Judd, an American modernist sculptor who was profoundly influenced by Russian art of the 20s and basically the 20s, but constructed this model, developed that in the United States, and Donald Judd, who was famously opinionated and famously tough on other artists, out of all the artists of the recent generation, hit Kavakov. He understood Kavakov, he understood Kavakov's dialogue with the past, and gave Kavakov a very important exhibition in the spaces that he controlled. And so now Kavakov talks back to Donald Judd through Rosenthal. And so you get this incredibly complicated set of relationships, but it is about form. It is about the intentions of the utopian dream and the ability to meet an utopian dream. All of these things are there, and that's what we should be talking about. And the way, even just look at the drawings for these different parts of the exhibition. It's always a picture with a person standing in front of it, and very often a picture with two people standing in front of it, and those two people have different points of view, and he always is waiting, he's laying a trap for people to wander through this maze and to figure out for themselves what really is going on. That's it.
And very much it is art that comes out of, it doesn't come out of, but it is dialogue with minimalism in that, in the very sense that minimalism put the attention of the viewer back on the viewer's own body and the viewer's own response. And the viewer is always the central character in any Kavakov exhibit. You guys go in that wagon and you know it. But I have a feeling that the people in this audience know the work of Kavakov very well, and that the issue is going to be how the rest of Moscow responds. Has anybody heard any responses or read any responses that further this discussion?
Prof.
Yes.
Hello. I would like just to make a point. It's not a question. It's and don't make me wrong. It's about the communication, about the whole thing. What is happening in here? What is happening in here is really great, and it's going to enhance, I guess, the international attention to what's happening in here. But yesterday I was at my friends, where I stay here in Moscow. They are my parents' generation, and we've been watching news, and the question was raised more about the sponsorship, because previously we've been talking how do we discover artists, etc. Much is about promotion and sponsorship, and what they told on television about the event in here was much more about the sponsors, which I don't have to name. I haven't heard much about Kabakovs, and people I stayed, they told me we don't feel concerned about what's happening there because it's maybe the sponsor's toy or something, and I don't know that. I mean, they don't feel that they're going to be concerned by Kabakov or about the contemporary art or about what's going to be further. Maybe they're wrong, maybe they're right, I don't know, but the situation is unclear. On these terms, And internationally, it's true also. You can read Bloomberg, you can read the art newspaper, you can read Journal des Arts in France, you can read anything you want. Even modern painters, they are talking about the sponsors who are behind all these things. Maybe it is going to enhance the interest of other people who might sponsor different shows. But this is my thought, this is where I'm lost by now. And we come back to what the lady said, it's about the access. Of course, if you know that the show is open, you can ask the question to the guards, they tell you, okay, go around, there is a show, you can go. But still, the whole thing is... that's my point, I don't know. It's no question, but mine, I'm just...
Can I respond? That was the question. I understand exactly what you're saying. I think there are actually a couple dimensions of it. There is certainly the kind of press that simply talks about sponsorship because it's, in a sense, fixated on issues of money and so on. There's a critical press which talks about sponsorship because they wish to criticize what they think are the uses or misuses of money, so that you have, if you will, two sides of the same coin, but it's still always about the coin, right? The thing is to start talking not about the coin so much. I used to work for the Museum of Modern Art. The Museum of Modern Art is paid for by the Rockefeller family initially. Once upon a time, people talked and talked and talked about the Rockefellers. But then they went into the museum and they found Diego Rivera and they found Malevich and they found Picasso, and then they started to talk about what was on the walls. It pays to know that it was paid for by somebody like the Rockefellers, but it's not the whole story. The real trick is to get people past the door and into the work, and then they can remember that and they can think about it, but they must think about the work on its own terms some of the time, otherwise all the rest of it doesn't matter.
You know, if you believe, and this is my belief, that really great works of art are disturbing in a fundamental way, we find all kinds of reasons to normalize that experience. You know, I think if you look at a work of art that really moves you in some deep way, it's like falling in love with somebody. It's very upsetting in a way. It kind of disorganizes your whole way of that you structure your life because it's changing things and you have to be open to this. Now, you know, we are also looking for ways to defend ourselves. And museums have a whole structure whereby, you know, one of the conventions is to frame everything the same way or hang it at the same level or put it on a white wall. Different kinds of ways of making all the things look the same. You know, the press has other ways of doing that. If you have to make a conversation about money, you don't have to talk about what it's really about. So, you know, there are many different dialogues that go on, and many of them are concerned with this, I think, the issue of normalizing something that we all understand to be a little disturbing. And we have to really, if we really want to engage it, we have to engage it on a deeper and much more personal level. So, I mean, that's the conversation I think that we really want to be having. I'd like to hear from Gary, because he's not even doing that to deal with his audience.
No, I was just going to give an anecdote about how the artist can endure the celebrity aspect. I was at an opening at the Grand Palais a few years ago, the Cézanne exhibition, the magnificent Cézanne exhibition, and the president of France, Chirac, was coming to open the exhibition with just a few people who had lent works of art. But there were lots of paparazzi out, and Chirac came up the steps and turned to look at the paparazzi, and they all put their cameras down. And then he went inside, and Princess Diana came up the stairs, and all the paparazzi were flashing their photographs. Because Princess Diana, who had nothing to do with Cézanne, nothing to do with France, happened to be there. She's a celebrity, and so that's what the press was focusing on. The exhibition happened. It was a magnificent exhibition. People saw Cézanne's work and appreciated it or didn't. And it had nothing to do with Princess Diana, which is to say that press is a phenomenon that you were speaking of, the celebrity phenomenon, or whatever it is the press is focusing on, just is simply irrelevant to the experience of the confrontation with the works of art, so I wouldn't let it disturb any of you.
I was going to say, very often it's conservatives who stress this issue, saying that modern art is just froth on top of, you know, economic whatever it is, and they conveniently forget that those old masters that they deeply admire and hold up as a prime value in art worked for the Sforzas and the Medicis and hated the Sforzas and hated the Medicis. And if you go to Ajanta in India, to the cave, it's full of Buddha sculptures, and you can read the patrons' names on the side of them, and they go back before the Christian era. So, you know, it's a very selective use of this concentration on patronage by people who don't want to deal with the art.
I'll also say that a lot of the press happened because of who sponsored it. It might not have happened, so maybe some people will see it because they read a story they would have read before. So one more question. This is supposed to be over, and I'm expecting a phone call, so I'm going to be horrible and look and see if there's a phone call I need. One more question, and then we'll end it. Is there anyone who would like to add something? Yes.
Можно вопрос? Или вы хотели?
Даже не вопрос, а маленький комментарий. Наверное, самое главное заключается в названии этой выставки «Альтернативная история искусства». И о чем бы мы ни говорили, очень важно, что один художник смог... Чему альтернативная эта выставка? Супрематизму, соцреализму, Западу, Востоку, в том мире, в котором мы живем, и в том мире, где глобально возвращается, давит нас, репрессирует и, в общем-то, убивает нас все живое, очень важно, что искусство по-прежнему готово создать альтернативу. И Кабаков это показывает и выставка тоже. Так что, что бы ни было, стоят охранники, говорят о спонсорах, это не важно. Пусть каждый найдет здесь свою альтернативу.
А можно все-таки вопрос? Можно все-таки вопрос? А можно я задам вопрос, продолжая эту реплику? Можно я задам вопрос, продолжая реплику Олеси Туркиной? Я хотела вот, собственно говоря, продолжить, Олеся, то, что ты начала говорить. Мне тоже кажется, что на самом деле вот возвращение через 10 лет Ильи Кабакова в Россию – это очень интересное само по себе событие, потому что когда он уезжал, я помню, в каких-то своих книгах он писал, что он начал делать инсталляции для того, чтобы создать контекст для своих детей, имеется в виду картины. Потому что контекста для его искусства, собственно говоря, на Западе не было. Мне кажется, очень важно понимать, что русское искусство, оно не репрезентативно в нонконформистский период. То есть у нас не было вайт-куба, у нас не было формы репрезентации. Искусство было скорее коммуникативной формой общения. И в этом смысле, конечно, то, что мы сейчас видим, эту выставку, она показывает нам совершенно другого Кабакова, который был здесь, в русском искусстве, нам известен. И вот мне хотелось, ну, как бы вот в случае Кабакова действительно удачное очень соединение локального и глобального. Я хотела задать вопрос, как вы считаете, возможен ли хороший художник в локальном контексте, не входящий в глобальный контекст?
Addresses both of those questions, which are really very relevant and really, I think, right on. We're trapped by the language we use to describe something, you know, and Kabakov is obviously very aware of this, you know. What Kabakov means today here, coming back from a career in New York, is different than what he meant, what the work meant in the context that existed before. Things are in a kind of dynamic movement. I was thinking about our conversation about nationalism. You know, some museums right now are moving in the direction of presenting their collections of nationalistic tendencies. I had a tour of the new building of the Art Institute in Chicago recently with a curator who explained to me that there were all the American art in this place and these were going to be the European artists. And I said to him, what are you going to do with Marcel Duchamp? You know, who born in France, most of his major works and his greatest impact was in the United States as he ventures to America. You know, and I think it really is so much about how we frame the way we look at things, and that is always changing in terms of the realities of our experience. So, again, I think your question, both of those questions are very relevant to the issue of how do we define the context, and how much can we press ourselves to be self-critical to understand how we are shaping our own assumptions about the things we look at.
I just respond that the word global is a word that entered the general vocabulary relatively recently, and it had mostly to do with commerce. I noticed just actually this morning coming in the bus that the word brand has now been transliterated into Russia, and we talk about brand or something like that. So all kinds of languages, this commercial language, is entering in. It's the sign, it's the trace element of globalism. I prefer words or juxtapositions like universal and local to global and local. And I would just cite a text that appeared in the catalog of Marina Abramovich's show in Venice Biennale, the Karzemandi. And in this, there was a catalog essay. She was had done an exhibition which was about her mother and father, both of whom were heroes of the partisan war against the Nazis. And also, she was commenting on the then war in progress in the Balkans, which is to say a very specific, not local, but regional situation. And one also about nationalisms, about competing nationalisms, ethnic identities, and so on. In any case, it was an amazing performance piece, an amazing exhibition. And in the catalog, there was a short text by a Serbian philosopher whose name escapes me, and he said that the universal is the local without walls. And I like that.
On that note, thank you everyone for coming.